Good evening, one and all. Yes, I'm back. Well, not that you might have really known I'm away, because I'm sure they put a show in, but I was actually due to have gone back to England the last week or two. My niece was getting married, and we had a little break planned and going down to Cornwall after seeing the family and everything. But, of course, with everything that's been going on, we had to cancel it. And the wedding was cancelled until next year, but we haven't had an excuse for the weather. That's for one thing, because it's been here in Connecticut where I am, it's been blinking hot. Yes, I think we hit 100 one day, but it's been hot. And of course, we are now still, we are still recovering in Connecticut from the tropical storm that hit us last week. I think there's still, even though they promised everything would be done by today, of course, there's still about 30,000 people without electricity. A week later, after, I think it was 500,000 plus we lost originally. But we don't get, do you think we don't get much like that in Connecticut? Well, we do in a way, but perhaps not, obviously not as bad as some of the other places. But in fact, this very house I am sitting in right now and doing this show from had a tornado touchdown on it 10 years ago. I wasn't here. My now wife was, and her parents were here at the time. And my wife was actually visiting me in another town, and she couldn't get back to the house. It literally touched down on the house, and there was trees in each corner, which ended up like twisted together over the top. But that's nothing compared to some of these places that have these big hurricanes. I mean, if you go back, and we're going back in a minute with my guest, that's why this is a long-winded way of introducing my guest, by the way. 1957, Hurricane Audrey. Now, I'd remember that name because it's my mother's name. I can blame her for that. But 1957, that Hurricane Audrey, well, it was one of the worst. I think it's one of the seven worst for life in America and the top three in Louisiana, I think. But it was an awkward time, if you think 57. We were still recovering from the war. I know we still had, well, we say sweet rationing, but candy rationing in England till at least 54. I was born in 52, so at least 54 that was going on. And I think around about 57, talking to my mother the weekend, was the first time she actually saw a banana. I know, it doesn't seem possible, does it? But can you imagine that? And the people come back from the wars and everything that followed on from the wars and secrets that might have been being let out around that time. Anyway, my guest can tell us a bit more about this, because on the show today, I have, I say the one and only, but it's the one and only on this show because there's a few of them. But on this show, the one and only Linda Cunningham. Hi, Linda, how are you doing?
Hi, Barry. I am fine. How are you?
I am pretty good, love. I'm pretty good. I am back to work after my few days off tomorrow, though I am on call tonight. But it's back to the normal routine, which hasn't really changed because I work from home normally, so it doesn't make a huge amount of difference. But yeah, we're sort of getting power back and internet back and stuff, but nothing like Hurricane Audrey in 1957.
Right. I was 9 years old in this hurricane, and my father was director of civil defense for Calcasieu Parish. So I saw all of the coroner's pictures. My father had all the information. I probably wasn't supposed to be seeing them, but I did.
Right.
I was very curious. And but anyway, and then we housed refugees that came in from Cameron, and they stayed in our house, in our neighbor's house, and I heard their stories, and as a 9-year-old, I saw them telling their survival stories, and it just broke my heart. As a 9-year-old, I couldn't believe this happened to these people. And I just saw their shell-shocked faces and their, these people were experiencing their darkest night. And it was very, very touching for me to witness this.
Yeah, because it came pretty quick, didn't it? I mean, and obviously in those days, you had the radio and stuff, but you didn't have the sort of meteorological type stuff you do these days, did you?
Oh, that's right. I mean, the weather was just a slippery science back
that
day, and it they said it was going to come in on Friday, and this was Thursday, and And they were my characters were going to leave that morning, as did the real people of Cameron. Many of them had planned on leaving on Thursday because they thought it was going to hit on Friday. But they forgot about the high water that comes in.
Right,
first.
The surge, yeah.
The surge, and then they couldn't, the roads were not accessible. So it was just very sad. So they had to ride it out on the roofs of their houses.
Because Cameron was, this is one of the things, you know, they don't know the exact number. They know it's over 400, but they can't give the exact number because of I think it was Cameron, and I can't think where the other one was. It was near this Sabine River, was it, something like that? The surge and everything just took people away. They don't know to this day how the exact number of people, do they?
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. So it's over 400, nearly 500. I don't know. We never had the exact number because of all the people that were never accounted for.
And as you say, you know, not like prepared like now. You know, you go, oh, okay, we're gonna move tomorrow. It's not coming till Friday. You know, give time to sort of pack up and get out of here. Boom, too late, wasn't it? Too late, was it? 125 mile an hour winds and the big surges and oh, cracky. I mean, it must have been horrendously for a young child. The noise, I can imagine, it must have been frightening.
Right, right, and the surges, and their house breaks up, and that was very typical of all of the houses. Their houses actually just broke apart, and they ended up riding on their roof. But the real stories that came from this time, I heard from the people, and I heard from my father. And, I mean, they found a live baby floating on a dead cow.
Wow.
I mean, that's a true story.
Wow.
And so I have incorporated some of these true stories, not that one, but some of these the true stories into my fiction story. It's a fictionalized memoir and about the historical event of 57, so that puts it in the historical fiction genre.
Right, because this is your first book, and it's called Early Thursday, A War, A Hurricane, A Miracle. And as you say, we know it was Thursday. The miracle could well be that baby on the cow, the dead cow. but in the book, you know, you look at it from this, 12-year-old boy, is he, or is he younger than that? I can't remember.
He's 12 years old, and it goes through his life, but it's from the eyes of, it's in the point of view of 12-year-old Walt LeCour. And this is Cajun country in southwest Louisiana.
Right.
So we have the Cajun culture in there and the joie de vivre of the Cajuns. They're just the happiest people in the world. But they went through a terrible time through Hurricane Audrey, and so I hope I captured this because, you know, I have thought about this all of my life. It haunted me, too. And I had to do something. And John Kelly was one of our reviewers, and he said that this was a love letter to the victims and the volunteers of Hurricane Audrey. I thought that was so nice.
Very nice. But the story, though it does have the whole hurricane part as the center, there is a story surrounding that, isn't there, with it, like the background of the paternity scandal and then, you know, when later on when he's at college, you know, somebody who knows secrets about him and stuff like that. You've managed to weave the hurricane into a, you know, another family historical story.
Right. It's kind of an epic type of story. It's got several layers and several different subplots that I just weave it all together, and it comes out in the end, and then the miracle happens in the end, and I'm not going to talk about that.
No. Don't give it away. No, not unless they buy it. That's it.
Right. But anyway, it was a sad event for them. And it was cathartic for me as well for writing this.
Right.
And, you know, I kind of released it because I was quite young to witness all this.
So how,
I was in the hurricane in Lake Charles.
Well, see, I can imagine as a youngster, there is stuff that you locked away, you didn't want to remember. And as you said, and this happens with a lot, like people who write books about abuse and things like that. When they write the story or, you know, write about their lives, or quite often, you know, within a fiction novel, because people tend to understand it better, that it does sort of enable people who are reading it to put themselves into that person's position, because it is a fictional novel, and you know, as you read it, you sort of almost become the hero, heroine, or whatever. So it's interesting to hear that you say that it did allow a release for yourself, and obviously I reckon sort of unlock some memories you'd forgotten about.
That's exactly right, because I did a lot of research on this this hurricane. I also interviewed a lot of people that went through it, and in the love story part of this book, we had German POWs in Franklin, Louisiana, mm-hmm. right after, during the war. And it was a minimum security POW camp for Germans, because the Germans, they weren't Nazis, they were just German soldiers that were drafted. So they were sent over to the States to work the sugarcane fields and the rice fields. And so I went to Franklin, and I interviewed these little old French ladies, and they were just adorable. And they said, oh, I remember when those pink-skinned, blonde-haired, blue-eyed soldiers walked down the street to the prison. And you know, it was cute the way they were putting it. Mm. And so this is part of the story. The mother falls in love with the POW.
Wow.
So it's quite involved, but it all comes together, and I enjoyed writing the entire time. I mean, I'm just in love with writing.
Good.
You know? And so many possibilities, you know, when you're writing, because it's historical fiction, but some of the stories that I put in there were just pure fiction,
yeah.
You know.
I know, but it's nice to have that, as you say, being historical. You have the nucleus,
right.
You have the nucleus there, you know,
right.
Which you've got the facts for, and as you said, you managed to speak to people and gain information. And then it's up to you what you want to weave around the edges. I mean, I love the sort of historical fiction. Steve Bagley comes on, you know, that's if once a year when he does his book, and he always looks for a historical story that, and then he can weave his sort of magic around that, and that it to me is great, because he's educating at the same time as enjoying a story, you know. It's,
exactly,
this will go along my Quilts of G's Bend and Three Rivers Floods and all the sort of things like that that I've picked up along the way about America, that I now know more than a lot of Americans. and I think it's great. The fact that, you know, it was so long ago, were you surprised to find how many people could still remember it as vividly as you could?
Oh, in Lake Charles in Louisiana, they all remembered it.
Mm-hmm.
Of my age, you know, they all knew about it, and then their children and grandchildren heard about it. Oh, I went to Cameron just recently, and mm-hmm. they have mm-hmm. monuments and different things, and we went through the cemeteries, and so many of the graves washed up during that storm,
right.
And they were reinterred.
Right.
So, you know, it was a horrible thing that the people went through. But I hope these people will enjoy this and take it in the spirit that I have written.
Exactly.
Because this story is about survival and the search for identity and love and forgiveness. So
Yeah, because, I mean, you know, we say it's, what, seventh deadliest hurricane to strike USA, but it's the third deadliest in Louisiana. So it's not like Louisiana hadn't had stuff like that before. It was, you know, it was, it just caught everybody by surprise, I think, how the day,
well,
day
yeah.
early. Yeah.
Well, you know, most hurricanes will veer off.
Yes.
You
yes.
know, they yep. will not. But Hurricane Audrey was in a straight line and headed straight toward camera, and it never veered away.
Wow, because as you say, you always hear, well, it's going to hit here, and once it hits land, it's going to veer over here, or it's going
right.
to veer that way. That just went straight. That's just, I guess, because of the power of it and everything like that. It was just, there's nothing going to stop it.
That's exactly right. When I was a child, I was in our living room, and of course my father was at the civil defense office, but
right.
my grandparents were there, and trees were crashing around us. I heard these giant cherry trees just crashing, and the tops of trees just like of a toothpick, just,
yeah.
you know, they just popped off.
Right.
And so I remember all this, and I remember my mother was pregnant with my brother, and you know, they were just really afraid for her because there's no way to get out,
right.
you know.
And it was early, wasn't it? I mean, it was in June, and you don't think of hurricanes.
It was in June, yeah,
you
June 27th.
You don't even think, do you, of June? I mean, it must have been one of the earliest of the hurricanes of that power
that's
has ever
right.
been.
That's right. Well, the people there have had experienced tropical storms and high seas and things like that all the time. I don't think they thought this was going to be as bad, but they were told to get out, and they had planned to get out.
Right.
But they were trapped with the water, the high water.
Yeah, because that's the other thing. You know, it's not just the trees, as you said. It was, 20-foot surges, tidal wave or something
surges.
Like that. Yeah.
Right. Because
that's one of the things about Walt, isn't it? He has to sort of, you know, brave that sort of thing as well in the story.
That's right. That's right. He is floating on the roof of his house, and then he nearly drowns when he jumps in to save his father.
Wow.
And while he was drowning, so people that are interested in near-death experiences or things like that, they're going to be very interested in this. Because while he was drowning, he had this incredible ability to focus. And so he, you know, he saw this leaf, and he saw the... He just marveled at the intricacies of this single oak leaf with its webbing thoroughfare of veins and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I remember that he had this sense that he had been a witness to miracles like the leaf, but he didn't see them because of the swirling debris of his life.
Right.
And he says it was a great sin. And so I follow that throughout all the way to the end. And that little motif there. And then at the end, he's saying, you know, I surmise that we are presented with two belief systems in life, one positive and one negative. And the first one is that everything is a miracle, like the leaf with its webbing, delicate veins that I remembered, that he remembered when he was drowning. And the other is that nothing is a miracle. And so it's your choice. And he chose the first, the miraculous. And he said, if the leaf is a miracle, then what am I?
Right.
And so he finally recognized that he is also a miracle. And so and he knew he had to learn to recognize the miracles in life.
Right. I know you've sort of won awards for screenwriting. Do you how different do you find screenwriting from, I mean, screenwriting, you've got the camera to show stuff, whereas on a novel writing, you're painting that picture with words. Do you find it much different between the two things?
Well, yes and no. I can get into Walt's head more.
Right.
And when you're doing the screenplay, you have to show his actions. You know, you're always doing actions to show how he feels.
Mm.
But I love the fact that I could get into his head and how he thinks and how he evolves as a human being, you know, and how he grows up and how he has what you would call PTSD, you know.
Right.
He has post-traumatic stress syndrome.
Right, I can imagine.
After this
yeah.
horrific event. And so this is something he has to overcome throughout his life. And he struggles with all of that. Mm-hmm. And just like the war soldiers have PTSD, he experienced that as well.
In a different way, yeah. Now you've written this first one, Early Thursday, A
yes.
War, A Hurricane, A Miracle. What's your next one? You must be on another one already.
I am. My father's unit during World War II, this will be another historical mm-hmm. fiction genre, but during World War II, he was in Merrill's Marauders, behind Japanese lines in Burma.
Okay,
and
yes.
Yes, and Merrill's Marauders is up for the gold medal.
Yeah.
And I have been writing letters to congressmen and things like that.
Right.
For this to be awarded to this unit, the 5307th composite
yeah.
unit, and it's just called Merrill's Marauders. But anyway, the 3,000 men went in, and there was 130 left standing out of the original bunch that went in.
Yeah.
It was horrific for them. But my father kept a diary of every
really?
Day.
Oh, my
yes.
goodness.
So this
How
is going
special
to,
is that?
I'm working, yeah, so I'm working on this to weave that diary into the story and then my memoir with my father, because he experienced PTSD badly. And so that's what I'm working on now, and I'm enjoying it, and just the more digging into things, the more memories I remember.
Yeah.
And, you know, I want to honor these guys because they're going, hopefully they'll get the gold medal.
Yeah. Yeah, because I remember BBC thing about it. I'm sure I do. About the sort of number that went in and how they came out and, you know, what happened to them and everything. And we actually got, I had somebody on the show, I should think about 4 weeks ago, who wrote about, oh dear, what's the place, Hiroshima, something, I can't think what it is, and he wrote about the supposed hero, you know, who's sort of got the medals and became the hero and everything, and I can't remember his name, anyway, and also the leader of the Japanese troops on the island, and that, and the stuff that he's found out, and you know, he was telling at the start of the thing about, you know, we hear about the Holocaust in Europe and that, but that was like 2.5 million. In Japan, it was between 4 and 5 million people were killed off, mm-hmm. you know, Chinese and stuff like that. And you don't realize that this, how bad it was over there and what the people had to go through. So sort of hearing about your stuff is, you know, I'd be really interested when it comes out. I'd have to have you back on the show, you know, to find out what you've actually discovered.
It's going to be very interesting. There's been a lot of books written on it, but never one with a diary
no.
in my and as a memoir. So no. this will be a little bit unique, and I was just so proud of this outfit, and we've got our 290 co-sponsors for the gold medal. So I hope to honor them also.
That'd be great.
Because everything I write, I want goodness to come out of mm-hmm. it, you know, and for people to put themselves in the place of the characters.
Exactly. Well, I know some good. I'm hoping some goodness has come out of this program because it's been fascinating chatting to you. But time is beating us. So what I'm going to do now is hand the show over to you so you can tell everybody where people can find out more about you and your book, please.
Okay, thank you so much, Barry. It's just been a pleasure. It's been an honor to be on this program. And you can buy the book at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, www.store.bookbaby.com, all the major retailers. You can buy it online, and you can like my page at Linda S. Cunningham, author. But be sure and put Linda S. Cunningham, because that's the way it'll pull up. And I'm just thrilled to be here, and I'm honored that your readers and your listeners will be interested in early Thursday.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for being a guest. It's been fascinating chatting to you. Good luck with the book.
Well, thank you so much. This has been such a pleasure.
My pleasure too. Anyway, good luck. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, bye-bye. There you go. My guest today, Linda S. Cunningham. And we've been talking about her book, Early Thursday, A War, A Hurricane, A Miracle. Really interesting book, some for sort of first-hand knowledge, obviously, she's got there and talking to people about the Hurricane Audrey, 1957. But with it, sort of round it, is a sort of a 12-year-old boy's story and romance as well, further on and stuff in that, Walt LeCour. Fascinating book. Look, it's one of those ones that's going to appeal to a lot of different genres and people who like different types of book. Well, that's it for now. I'll be back with a fresh guest tomorrow. But until then, as always, we have one thing left to say. Don't forget. Make sure it's working. Linda, that was great. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. It was just delightful to be on. You know, one of my very best friends is from, well, she lived in London, but she was from Spennymoor.
Okay, yeah.
And so I'm so used to listening to her with her British accent that I just love. I
wish
to talk like you.
Well, I refuse to lose it. I keep telling everybody it has too many advantages over here.
Oh, I love it. Everybody loves a British accent.
Yeah, right.
I have the southern accent.
Yeah, a little bit,
but
yeah.
It reflects where I grew up.
Yeah, of course you do. Of course you do. And I mean, I am not American. I've been here 20 years, but there's no way I'm American. Uh-huh. You know, I was actually due to go back 2 years ago, and then the whole thing fell through. But, yeah, uh-huh. But I will never be American. I'd be home tomorrow if I could, shall I say.
I know. You miss your home.
Yeah, I do indeed.
Well, my friend goes back and forth to England, and this is the first year that she hasn't been back to
see
her family.
Same with me. We would, you know, as I said at the beginning, we were due to go back for my niece's wedding, and we had a week's stay in Cornwall booked, plus seeing all the family and everything, and then it all fell through. So we have... Everything, all the planes got cancelled, the weddings got cancelled and everything, but you have to do what you have to do, don't you?
That's right. So and maybe this will be over. I just pray that this will be over soon.
Yeah, indeed. Well, thank you so much. And I say, when your next book's out, please come back and chat to us again.
I will. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye for now.
Bye-bye.